Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on Edgewise today is Susan Sherhouse. She's served as executive director of the National Conference on Peacemaking and Conflict Resolution and on the advisory board of the Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution at George Mason University. Her clients have included Lockheed Martin, Philip Morris, the IRS, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and many others. She's the author of Conflict 101, A Manager's Guide to Resolving Problems So Everyone Can Get Back to Work. Susan, welcome to Edgewise.
It's good to be here, Dave.
We often think of conflict as a destructive force, but you point out that that's not always the case.
When I'm talking about conflict, I'm talking about when what you want, what you need, what you expect gets in the way of what I want, what I need, what I expect.
Mm-hmm.
Managers are resolving conflicts all the time. They don't even recognize that that's what they're doing. They often don't put the label conflict on them. It's when a conflict goes unresolved, escalates to an argument or a fight, that we suddenly are uncomfortable and we slap that word conflict on there, and it gives conflict a bad name. Several years ago, I came over a hill driving my car and rear-ended a car that was stopped at a stoplight that I did not know was there. It got everybody's attention.
I'm sure it did.
The car in front of the car I hit, the mm-hmm. police, my insurance company. Since that time, got my car repaired, got back on the road, and I have been driving and realizing that there are lots of cars that I do not rear end, and no one ever gets out of their car and says, thank you for not rear ending my car.
Right.
It's true about managers. That, in fact, is what managers do. Conflict comes in. There are policy issues. There are procedural issues. There's supervision of employees. Manager deals with each one as it comes along, and it's not until those rear-end collisions that suddenly everybody knows something has gone wrong here.
Sure. I used to work in a smaller agency, and the directors of this agency looked for us to have conflict, but it wasn't paralyzing conflict. The way they described it, mm-hmm. it was creative differences. We look for you to bring your perspectives and your ideas and be willing to stand up and defend your point of view.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons you're a member of the team is you have a strong point of view on this topic, so don't surrender it. Fight for what you think is important.
Oh, that's excellent. Healthy conflict, conflict that's dealt with effectively, is the foundation of progress. There's very little progress that's not preceded, in fact, by some kind of conflict. When people are comfortable with the status quo or afraid of disagreement, nothing changes.
Right.
So that approach that was taken there is really surprisingly healthy. And I don't see it as often as I would like to in the workplace.
What do you think are the biggest obstacles to resolving conflict in the workplace?
Fear is big. I put that at the top of the list.
Yeah, but fear of what?
Fear of being seen as flawed or incompetent. Fear of making a mistake. Fear of the unknown. What's on the other side of this conflict? Can we resolve this? And can we come out of it still with a working relationship? Conflict can be pretty scary. There's a lot that can go wrong, and that's where the fear comes from, not having all the answers. Another one of the obstacles to resolving conflict is the assumptions that we often carry with ourselves. It's in an automatic thought kind of process. You see something, you hear something, you put it into your past experience and interpret it as meaning, whatever meaning you attach to it, and then you take action. I had a conversation recently with a manager who complained to me, I sent her an email and she ignored it. I recognized that there was a huge assumption that he had automatically made, that she had intentionally not responded.
Mm-hmm.
When I questioned, do you know that she received the email? We found out that in fact, there were mice under the floorboards within this office building. And these mice frequently chewed through the wires of people's computer connections.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it happens.
So we have assumptions about what somebody else is thinking or why they took an action that they took. And we even have assumptions about what conflict means, and those assumptions get in our way.
Right. For me, sometimes it's a cinematic experience where the assumptions you make are played out in your head in a fraction of a second, like micro movie. You make these assumptions about a person's character.
Right. Their motives, their intentions.
Absolutely. And their tolerance for bad information or what you deem to be bad information.
And it happens within split seconds of hearing something or seeing something, that we carry out the whole drama and we know how it ended. And then we just step into the play we've created in our heads.
I think so. It's amazing. Mm. Now, a parallel issue to this is trust.
Absolutely. When resolving conflict, the most important thing anybody can do is be very active about developing trust. When we trust each other, we can resolve virtually any difference between us. When people don't trust each other, the simplest issues, questions become almost insurmountable, mm-hmm. because I'm not going to believe what you're saying. I'm not going to accept what you're saying. I'm not going to tell you what I think would be important for you to know because I don't know what you're going to do with it. Trust is absolutely the foundation here.
All right. One of the key concepts in the book is the satisfaction triangle. Why don't you tell us about that?
One side is the outcome, the substance of the decision. One is the process, how the decision is arrived at. And the third side is emotional satisfaction. How was I treated along the way?
Mm-hmm. Could you go deeper on these for us?
Often our focus in a disagreement is on the outcome, the substance of the decision.
Right.
Many of us have had this experience of working with someone and giving them exactly what it was they asked for, and they're still ticked off. We can't understand it.
Mm.
What we don't realize is the power of those other two sides of that triangle. Some of us have had another experience. Somebody comes into my office and has some major complaint, and I'm listening, and I'm thinking, man, I don't know what to do about this, but I keep listening. And after I have listened for a bit, they may stand up, leave the room calmly and say, thanks so much for hearing me out. And I'm thinking, I didn't do anything about that. But I've been focused on just one side of the triangle, the substance of the decision.
Yeah, exactly.
The second side is process satisfaction, mm-hmm. satisfaction about how decisions get made. People know where they have input, that how the decision is made in this situation is consistent with how it is made for other people, that the decision-making process is as transparent as possible.
Mm-hmm.
An example is awards.
Right.
I have worked in a number of organizations where the award system causes enormous conflict within the organization because there is so little trust, and the system for making the decision, the process, seems to people to be behind some very dark curtain.
Hmm.
Suddenly the awards emerge. I had one company who put together a committee of people who had won awards and people who had not won awards to decide what to do about the award system.
And what happened there?
Ultimately, that committee decided unanimously that there was no way to create a process that was transparent. They agreed that they should have no award system because there was no way to make it feel like it was fair and consistent for all the people involved. The third side of that triangle is emotional satisfaction.
Okay.
This is really good news for any manager dealing with any sort of situation,
mm-hmm.
virtually any disagreement, because we can give people emotional satisfaction of being heard and being treated with respect. That's not, I agree with you, but I can hear you out and I can respect who you are, what you know, and where you've been through this conversation.
All right. What should any manager, regardless of where they are in the organizational pyramid, do to resolve or address conflict in the workplace?
I have a few ideas to keep in mind. The first one is trust.
Of course.
If you have a trusting relationship, then when disagreements arise and when we want to encourage people to bring those disagreements into conversation so that we can learn from them, people are willing to do that.
Right.
This is being consistent, being reliable, demonstrating that you care about other people, about the employees, about the good of the group. Second is learning to harness the emotional component. That's not eliminating emotions and not overcoming emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Our emotional energy is a resource to be tapped. It starts with understanding your emotions and understanding the emotional reactions of other people. And rather than having those emotions control the interaction between us, use that energy and acknowledge it in moving toward some conversation that is productive. Third is the importance of apologizing when you've made a mistake. I've had a couple of conversations with managers who say, I never apologize. It's a sign of weakness. I don't think you apologize for everything, but there are times when accepting responsibility for something that hasn't gone mm-hmm. the direction that you had hoped it would is appropriate and necessary. The other side of that coin is forgiveness, allowing people to make mistakes and then to move on. Next is to keep your sense of humor. The power of a smile and of a friendly face and attitude goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one is remembering the value of time, allowing people, yourself included, time to change your mind, to accept apologies, to adjust to change.
Susan, are there any further thoughts or comments on the message you're trying to relay in the book? Anything you'd like to share?
Mm-hmm.
All right, go ahead.
Conflict is inevitable. And what I'm talking about in this book are life skills that apply when we're sitting in that manager's position or in whatever other context or relationship we're in the middle of.
Uh-huh.
There are lots of skills to learn along the way, but these are some foundational keys that lead us into skills that we develop to respond effectively.
We've been speaking to Susan Sharehouse, author of Conflict 101, A Manager's Guide to Resolving Problems So Everyone Can Get Back to Work, published by AMICOM, a division of the American Management Association. Susan, thanks for being with us today on Edgewise.
Thank you, Dave.
With only an internet connection and a browser, you can tap into AMA's world-class training. The American Management Association is bringing live instructor-led training right to your desktop. AMA's new virtual seminar offering features a live virtual format that is highly interactive and very user-friendly. It's taught by the same expert, world-class faculty that run our classroom sessions, and the high-quality content has been specially engineered to run in an online format. You get real-time online interaction with your course leader and your fellow attendees. You will receive a USB headset so that you can not only listen but talk to your classmates and your instructor. So take advantage of these offerings, enhance your career journey by building your skills, and you don't have to take any time away from the office. For more information about AMA's virtual seminar offering, visit our website at www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.